I'm John Krall. In just a few days, Hoosiers go to the polls to vote in the state's primary elections. Indiana has one of the most closely watched contests in the country in the hard-fought battle between incumbent Richard Lugar and challenger Richard Murdoch for the Republican U.S. Senate nomination. And there are hundreds of other races and issues the state's voters will decide next Tuesday. Today on No Limits, we will analyze the 2012 campaign so far with three of Indiana's most astute political observers: former Republican State Party leader Rex Early, former Democratic State Party leader Kip Two, and my colleague Leslie Weidenbender, managing editor of thestatehousefile.com. You can join the conversation by calling 1-866-476-3881, sending an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or shooting us a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Now, the day's news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking today about Indiana's primary and politics here on No Limits. Fortunate to have as our guests Kip Two, who is the former Indiana Democratic Party chair. Kip, welcome to the program. Good to have you back here.
Delighted to be here. Thanks for having me, John.
Rex Early, who is the former Indiana Republican Party chair. Rex, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
I think this is your first time, right?
Right.
Right. Good. And Leslie Stedman Weidenbender, who is the managing editor of the State House File, news website powered by Franklin College journalism students. Leslie, welcome back to the program.
Thanks. It's always great to be here.
And my listeners probably have figured this out already, but so that I'm not concealing anything, Leslie and I do work together at Franklin College and work together at the State House File. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. I'd like to start this, I think, by talking about what literally is the biggest story here, which is the Lugar Murdoch race in the U.S. Senate. And I'll start with Kip Two on that one. Why is this so big? I mean, why is this race? It's got national attention. To sort of set the scene here, why are we talking about this as much as we are?
Well, I think in part you have to go back to 2010, maybe even further back to 2008 as a reaction. But 2010, the Republican Party, with the rise of the Tea Party, really got split, and we saw in quite a number of states Tea Party candidates taking up against incumbent Republicans, and this is just the next step in that. Richard Murdoch is supported by a large number of Tea Party groups, not all of them. They're not completely together themselves, but by a large number of them. So I think the national press is taking an interest in it because they're wondering if this is the next Christine O'Donnell race or it's the next race in Nevada or those other places. But for the state of Indiana, for partisan politics, it's also interesting because it's my belief that if Lugar goes down, then you'll see a much larger presence by the Obama campaign here in the state because, number one, they obviously won last time here in Indiana, and I don't think it's on their top tier of states at the moment, but I think they've continued to look at it. They've got offices open here, and so they're looking at it. But if they can also pick up a United States Senate seat in the process, I think that it becomes much more valuable for them to be in here and be playing real hard.
Rex Early, I'm going to pick up on a point that Kip made here and just ask the question. I mean, has this split the Republican Party in the state? It's at times it seemed like a pretty nasty family quarrel.
Unfortunately, I think it has split the party. surprise, surprise. You know, one of the reasons that this particular election has become interested is the fact that Dick Lugar is a national figure.
Mm-hmm.
He's been there. You throw in the...
he's been on the Nobel list. That's right. International figure to some degree.
You throw in the fact that he's been in the Senate 36 years and his age. But this election is about Lugar. Charlie White could be his opponent. And there would still be an election. Dick Lugar's had some bad breaks. First of all, his two Supreme Court appointments. Everybody's looking at the immigration bill in the Supreme Court and, of course, the Obamacare bill. Mm. All at once, the whole people from all over the country are interested in a Supreme Court decision. Mm-hmm. And number two, I guess the fact that the polls show that anybody in Congress, at one time there was a single-digit approval rating for anybody in Congress.
Yeah, basically the common cold has got higher approval ratings.
But you know, this is a republic. People we send to Washington are there to vote what they think is right. They certainly can't take a poll of their constituents every time. And this is really a referendum on Dick Lugar. And I will say this. I have been astounded at how bad his I think his campaign is leaves a lot to be desired.
In what ways?
Well, one way is especially in primaries, name ID is everything. People crave name ID if they're going to run. Look up in the 5th Congressional District. There's a guy named Lugar running up there. Mm-hmm. I'll guarantee you he's going to get a lot of votes. Unfortunately, yeah. A lot of our primary voters, they don't really get down and look at the candidates. Name ID is what they vote on. And every hour, every few minutes, there's a television, a Lugar television ad mentioning Murdoch's name.
Yeah.
He's gone from a 10% name ID to a 98% name ID.
And a lot of it on Lugar's dime.
And Lugar could have, he could have made ads about about Dick Lugar. He and his cohort on the nuclear situation in Russia, the fact that he was in the military. There's several things he could have really pounded on that I haven't seen. So.
Yeah. I do think, I just wanted to add, I do think one of the reasons that this race has become so prominent nationally is because there actually aren't that many really interesting Senate races. There are not that many places where the Tea Party has been able to look at picking up a seat. You know, if the Tea Party doesn't manage to pick up this race or a couple of others across the country, then I think you'll find that Republicans will not be... other parts of the Republican Party will not be quite so scared of the Tea Party movement. If the Tea Party folks can manage to get Richard Murdoch this victory next Tuesday, then that gives them a tremendous amount of strength and reignites this idea that all Republicans need to pay special attention to the more conservative, the fiscally conservative wing of the party. And I think that's one of the reasons why you're seeing so much national attention on this race.
I guess I want to pick up on that point a little bit and talk about, are we all in agreement here that this is pretty much a referendum on Dick Lugar and his service?
Well, I think it is. I wouldn't say it's entirely about that. I think it's also a further test of the strength of the Tea Party movement, mm-hmm. whether it peaked in 2010 and the beginning of 2011 or whether it's past the crest starting to go back downhill. I think that is definitely part of the dynamic here that we're going to be testing next Tuesday.
And well, I think this is ahead, part Leslie of, Wagner. I think that's part of the same question in many ways. When you talk about referendum on Dick Lugar, you're talking about a referendum not only on Dick Lugar as a person, in which there are several issues such as his age, but there are additional issues in terms of does someone like Dick Lugar, who is somewhat more moderate, although a conservative by many standards, but is somewhat more moderate and is willing to work with Democrats. Can a candidate like that stand in the Republican Party as it exists today with the Tea Party where it is today? So I think all of the, when you talk about a referendum, I think it is not just a referendum on Dick Lugar himself, but on that type of candidate.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that where I was going, I think, with this is how this happened pretty abruptly. I mean, that we're talking about a guy who 6 years ago, the last time he ran for office, was so formidable that, frankly, Kip to the Democrats wouldn't even field a candidate against him. They thought that was wasted money.
And I thought it was a mistake for the Democrats not to do that 6 years ago, and I think it actually hurts Lugar this time because I think his campaign has not been sharp. And I think part of the reason it's not been sharp is they haven't had to compete in so many years. Lugar himself has not had a tough opponent in many, many years. And, you know, politics is a little bit like a sport in some ways. You got to be sharp when you're going into the battle. The one thing I wanted to add to what Leslie said about I want to just take issue for a moment about Dick Lugar being more moderate. I think what Dick Lugar is actually someone who's willing to listen to the other side, but he is a conservative. There should be no doubt about his conservative credentials. He was one of Reagan's closest supporters in the United States Senate. He's had a consistently conservative record. He's been anti-union his entire career in Congress. But what he has been is not a bomb thrower. And I think today's the Tea Party and the modern Republican Party wants people that are going to go to Washington and throw bombs. And that is not Dick Lugar. And that, I think, is the difference. But I don't think it's as ideological as it is his tone more than anything.
I actually agree with you, Kip. I do think that Dick Lugar is very conservative in most ways. But you're right. There is a wing of the Republican Party now that wants candidates who will stand up and will not compromise their ideals. And that is not Dick Lugar. Dick Lugar is a person who will stand up for his ideals, but is willing to talk to the other side, is willing to compromise, and also is willing to defer in some ways to the institution, which is sort of how he explains his votes for U.S. Supreme Court nominees, in that he believes that if someone is qualified, that it's up to the president to make a choice.
Right.
So that rubs a lot of folks in the Republican Party the wrong way.
I think both of you are giving the Tea Party a little too much credit about this situation.
Okay.
I take polls every time I talk to somebody and and how they're going to vote. And from Brown County to Lake County, and as a matter of fact, a friend of mine from Lake County who has a condo down in Florida next to mine, he says Lugar's in trouble in Lake County. And I was in Vincennes last week.
What, all two Republicans up there?
Hey, Lake County has more Republican voters. They're the second in the state.
Yeah.
But I talked to our new county chairman in Knox County, and he says it's entirely Murdoch country down there. And that's not there's no organized Tea Party group or.
Well, I think the Tea Party is more than just, though, sort of an organized. I think that's why we call it the Tea Party lowercase. It's almost more of a movement. It's more of a thought and philosophy in many ways than it is an organization. So when I talk about the Tea Party, it's more just the movement within the Republican Party right now that expresses a frustration that Republicans who are in Congress. A lot of these voters believe, have been unwilling to stand their ground and force the changes that they want.
We're talking about politics here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881, or you can shoot us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. How much of this, I'll ask real quickly, is a product of the fact that the complaint you keep hearing about Lugar is that he's Obama's favorite Republican? And obviously his photos was used in some of the campaign commercials in 2008. Is he paying a price for that, Rex Early?
I don't think so. I think the price he's paying is his vote on the Supreme Court, the two Supreme Court justices, and the fact that the Supreme Court is in the limelight right now all over the nation. And that's just a banner of bad luck.
I agree with Rex that obviously part of it is the Sotomayor and Elena Kagan votes, but I don't think there's any doubt among a lot of Republicans the fact that Richard Lugar in the 2008 campaign was seen as someone that was sort of staying out of that race and helping by staying out of it, helping Barack Obama ticked off quite a few rank and file Republicans. And I was just going to say about Rex, I don't disagree with him that you know, some people give the Tea Party too much credit in this race. But I also think Leslie's right. And when she says it's more about sort of the way things are here now. And that's what I was saying with regard to tone. If you're a Republican and you're not screaming bloody murder about this president, you're not getting on TV.
I agree with that.
We are talking about politics in Indiana's primary here on No Limits. My guests are Kip Tu, former Indiana Democratic Party chairman, Rex Early, former Indiana Republican Party chairman, my colleague Leslie Stedman Weidenbinder of the StateHouseFile.com. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I'm John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking today about Indiana politics and the primary election coming up in just a few days. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter. My guests, of course, are Kip Tu, Rex Early, and my colleague Leslie Weidenbinder. We've gotten an email question from a listener named Jim, and the question is really, obviously he's a Lugar supporter, wants to know why the media don't delineate the differences between these two in line with their past. Talks about Lugar's record in nuclear disarmament and the fact that, you know, some money went missing in the state, and the Supreme Court votes we were referencing and all of that. It's a complicated question, but really the basis of it is the media still able to, are the media, I guess I should use the plural there, are the media still able to track those kinds of issues and play the kind of enforcer referee role that reporters used to do in the past?
I'm not sure it's that much of an enforcer role, but certainly I think there have been a lot of nice, well done stories profiling these folks and giving their histories. I think the Indianapolis Star has done a couple of really nice profiles on the candidates. We've had a couple of good ones. I think, though, what happens when you have a race where the candidates are talking about everything else, there is a tremendous amount of money being spent from outside organizations. You're going to have a lot of reporting on that. Mm-hmm. These candidates have not done a particularly good job of talking about issues themselves. Mm-hmm. You're not hearing a lot of proposals from them. And as I think that Kip mentioned earlier, Dick Lugar in particular did not go out and in his campaign talk about those things. He did not run the high level, has not run the high level campaign that sort of equals the high level senator that he has been. And so he has not been out talking about those issues. And that has meant that the media is not out talking about them that much either.
Well, let me reframe the question a little bit here. And I'm going to pull Rex and Kip into this. There was a time when obviously, you know, your earned media strategy was a crucial part of any political campaign, because you had to work through media outlets to get to large audiences. Now there are all sorts of ways to connect with those people. Is part of the challenge here that you just don't have to work with traditional media outlets as much, Kip, too?
Well, I think that, you know, media is so much more dispersed than it was even a decade ago that it makes it much more difficult when you're in the middle of a campaign. You still want good earned media. I mean, that does not go away. I think both sides are always yearning for the referee to say that guy committed a foul and that guy didn't commit a foul, so that they can then go manipulate that information and say, see, the other guy's a bad guy because he committed a foul. And so both sides want that. But it's much more difficult. The trust of the American voter and the media is at an all-time low. And so even if the media plays referee, one side will say, well, that's just the big media in the tank for Dick Lugar. So if they did that, the other side would use it to their advantage in that respect. So I'm afraid in this instance, I don't think it would help Lugar or Murdoch for the Indianapolis Star to play referee as an example.
Well, Rex?
I agree with what Leslie said, too. It you would think that the Lugar campaign would emphasize his military experience, his mm-hmm. nuclear weapons trips over in the Ukraine. His campaign hadn't done that. The other thing that's sort of replaced a lot of the way we used to campaign is direct mail. There is so much direct mail floating now that it's unreal.
Mm-hmm.
It's not unusual for me to get five or six pieces of direct mail every day.
Well, and the electronic communication, the stuff that comes via the web and all of that. We are talking about Indiana primaries and politics here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Loretta, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Your question is, please.
Well, I have a comment, really.
Okay.
I think there will be, I'm a registered Democrat, and, of course, we're not too much for this Tea Party movement. And the people I talk to, and I myself, we will cross over in the primary and vote for Lugar. And I think there will be a significant number of people that would do that. And maybe your panel has some thoughts on that, or maybe they've had some input. But there will be a movement to keep Lugar on the ballot.
Thanks very much for the call, Loretta.
I think that's a really fascinating point, because we've been talking about how this could go two ways. Mm-hmm. You could have Democrats who decide to cross over and vote for Lugar, because Democrats have generally been pretty have been fairly comfortable with Senator Lugar. But then you could also have Democrats who cross over and decide to vote for Richard Murdoch, because they think Richard Murdoch will be the weaker candidate in the fall, easier to beat in the fall. So I actually think that this could go either way, and it would be fascinating if we were able to track it.
Well, Rex, I'm gonna take this a couple of ways. I'm going to give each of you guys a crack at it. Rex is the Republican voice on this show. How do you feel about Democrats coming in and trying to have a voice and settle your family quarrel?
I had thought about that before I came here, that is a subject that we've had conversations about, and there's no doubt Leslie's right. There are moderate Democrats who have voted for Lugar in the past in the general election, and intend to do the same, as your caller said. And I understand Parker, your state chairman, has suggested that Democrats vote for Lugar's opponent, his opponent, because he would be easier for Donnelly to beat. And so let's call it a wash.
Kip, to which of these candidates would Democrats prefer to run against?
Well, first? I think there's no doubt we'd rather run against Murdoch.
And why is that?
Because, I mean, he's Tea Party. I think the middle of the road voter in the fall, the 10, 15, 20%, depending on what you believe, who sort of are in the middle of the road, would be much more likely to support a Joe Donnelly over a Murdoch than a Joe Donnelly over a Richard Lugar. So I don't think there's really any doubt. And if you've looked at the polls, you can see the polls that have been taken so far. Joe Donnelly actually leads Richard Murdoch, and he's behind Dick Lugar. So I don't think there's any doubt about it. But what I want to take issue with both these folks are, I don't think there are that many. I mean, my friends and the people that are deeply, deeply involved in politics, who are, you know, the 6,000 people on Facebook or Twitter who follow politics every minute of every day, they may be likely to sort of play in the Republican primary to sort of mess it up. Mm-hmm. But like your caller, I think there are more Democrats that are like that. I think there's more folks that, like, they don't really calculate how can I advantage the Democratic Party here. I want to vote for who I think is going to be the best leader. And so I think there's a far more amount of people like that out there that aren't playing political calculations. So I think that there is, if Richard Lugar hangs on Tuesday, I believe it will be because of Democratic voters who cross over. Because, well, I think if it were just held between Republicans, he would lose.
Well, and I'd like to invite listeners to join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. I want to pick up on that a little bit, though. And what we saw in 2008 in the presidential primary here was that, you know, there was so much energy and attention over the Obama-Clinton race, and really the chance that Indiana's primary was going to to matter for the first time in 44 years. And all of that, that it seemed like pretty much every moderate and independent in the state flooded into the Democratic primary at that point. Are we going to see a dynamic like that at all in the Senate primary? Or is it just you got to get to the presidential level to have that kind of wattage? Kip, too, I'll keep it with you.
Well, if you look at what's happening with early voting, you're gonna and you project that out, we're not gonna have anything near what we had 4 years ago. Hamilton County, which is sort of the best place to check, I think, because that's where the most Republicans live these days, they're down significantly from 2008 in early voting. So I think. You know, people look at the presidential election as the one that's most important and one they want to have the most influence on. They do look at the Senate race, but I don't think they're going to there's not going to be the turnout. There's not going to be the excitement in this race that you would see otherwise. And also, I don't think that you have quite the excitement even in the Republican Party about this race that we did in the Democratic Party 4 years ago in the presidential race. Richard Lugar's a lot of things and has been a decent senator, but he's not Mr. Excitement. And,
charisma's not a term you hear attached easily to either one of these guys, but Rex Early.
And unfortunately, his speeches are only second to Doc Bowen.
I think Kip is right that that there's not nearly the excitement. I think we are not likely to see as big a turnout. I do think it's a little hard to tell from earlier voting because one of the things that happened 4 years ago was people were actually worried about lines. They were worried about what it was going to be like to vote on Election Day. A lot of people voted early almost out of fear about voting on Election Day. So it's a little tough to tell. But, I mean, I think there's no doubt we're not going to have this year the turnout.
I'll take one shot real quick, too. Sure. Republicans have done everything they can over the course of the last 2 years to disincentivize people from early voting. So I think that may have some factor to play as well.
We've talked an awful lot about the Lugar-Murdoch race. That's not the only election out there on Tuesday. We're deciding a whole...
Although it says a lot that that's what we've spent all our time on.
Yeah, it does. Well, and it does show how much... In a lot of these other races, congressional races, all of that, how hard it would be for those guys to cut through the noise, the candidates there, and get their message out. Kip, too.
Well, I before I came over here, I was watching television. I think I was watching one of the local news shows, and every single commercial in between those news shows was a negative campaign commercial, either in the 5th District, 5th District, 6th District, or the Senate race. And it's amazing. It's difficult at this point in the last week to cut through all that noise because there's so many people out there advertising. You know, I saw commercial for and against state rep candidate as well. So, I mean, I find it difficult to keep them straight, and I'm very involved in politics. I don't know how the average listener who's got a real life to keep and try to keep it all straight.
Yeah, an occupation, Leslie.
More difficult even this year. This is one of those very difficult years because we had redistricting. People don't even know exactly what a lot of people don't know exactly what congressional district they're in. They don't know where the lines are. And you are going to have a lot of advertising in the last week from candidates that folks are just hearing about for the first time. And so I think the confusion level is going to go up in this last few days.
What races, Leslie, are you watching most closely?
Well, obviously the battle to replace Congressman Burton is the key congressional battle in the state, I think. There is a tremendous amount of interest there. There's a lot of advertising and money. It appears that David McIntosh, who is a former congressman, is ahead there. But you see former U.S. Prosecutor Susan Brooks spending a lot of money. You're seeing Mayor Wayne Siebold spend a lot of time and energy in that race. And you have a lot of people on the ballot. And that can be very interesting. That can produce very interesting results.
I find it interesting, too, that it has attracted what I would call the most political talent. Because the way the lines were drawn, it's more marginal than the 6th District where Mike Pence is retiring to run for governor. That's a more reliably conservative Republican district than than the new 5th district, which I think is more marginal. And I just find it interesting that you have more what I would call top-tier candidates in the 5th district running. You've got a former district attorney. You have a sitting mayor. You have a guy who's run three times and came close to knocking Burton out. So you've got a lot of folks up there that are what I would call high talent, and they're all fighting for what's going to be a district they're going to have to work every year to keep.
Rex Early, and that is the 5th district race, the most interesting race other than Lubbock?
I think it is. The McIntosh story is interesting. The three wise men, Freddie Klipsch and Kittle and Hubbard, they moved McIntosh from away from Luke Messer to a district that he really has had very few. The new district for him was basically a new district, and Kipps too. The new maps make that district could be up for grabs. It's not as Republican as it used to be. The 4th is the most Republican now, and certainly the 5th is not nearly as Republican with the new map. Now Republicans ought to win the thing, but after all four of them committing Harry Carey, we'll know about all of their weaknesses, certainly.
One of the most interesting races actually could be in the former Mike Pence's district, because there is a candidate in there, Travis Hankins, who doesn't get any attention here in Indianapolis and is a candidate who used to be in the 9th congressional district and ran tremendously well in that Republican primary 2 years ago, ran just behind Todd Young, who ended up winning that primary. And when I was down in southern Indiana recently, the number of Travis Hankins signs and campaign material was amazing. And so I think people here think that Luke Messer has that all sewn up. I saw the governor endorsed Luke Messer today. But I think that he's got a bigger fight on his hands than most people think.
Interesting enough about Hankins, Leslie's right. He ran a heck of a campaign 2 years ago, and now he's going door to door in that district. And he has a twin brother who is a real twin, and they claim that they've never seen a guy knock on so many doors in one day.
We've gotten some email questions here. This one's from Michelle, a listener up in Lebanon, says, like the recent caller, I too will pull an R ballot and vote for Lugar. He's far more conservative than I am, but he's a true statesman, and those are rare in any age. I'm not telling many GOP friends that I'm supporting Lugar, lest this give more ammunition to the Tea Partiers. So do we have this kind of under-the-radar screen development here where you're going to have some stealth voting? Kip, too, you're sighing.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how those people do what they do in the 5th District when they're done voting for Lugar. What are they going to do in that decision? That could help Susan Brooks, I think, although I don't think she hasn't run the campaign to appeal to those people. I think that she should have, because I think there's going to be a significant number of them that are going to do it. And, you know, in the 5th District, you got Susan Brooks, who's a former U.S. District Attorney, a former deputy mayor, eminently qualified when you look at her resume on paper. And she has, at least in her television advertising, run just as far to the right as everybody else in that primary, which I was a little surprised at. But they must see polling that says they have to say those things to get themselves out of that primary. But there's a significant number of Democrats who will be playing in that race because they want to vote for Lugar, who are probably up for grabs because they have to stay in the Republican primary all the way down the ballot. They can't switch back and forth.
It's not like an a la carte line or whatever, where you get to pick one race.
I endorsed Brooks a while back But all I did was make enemies out of them. Out of the other people.
I am curious. I'm curious,
real quickly,
Kip, how many people did in 4 years ago? How many Republicans generally? Was there a big movement over into the Democratic primary?
It's not knowable because mm-hmm. people, because of the system that we have in the state of Indiana, people are allowed to change parties whenever they really want to. People don't really challenge them. So it's not a figure that you can nail down. But there's no question that as we tried to target those voters in 2010 and then again in this year, they didn't want to hear anything from us. So there's a significant number of Republicans who did pull a Democratic ballot in the 2008 election. I just can't give you a number. And I think there's going to be a significant number of Democrats because on our side, we don't have any fight except down in the 9th district.
Does that make you feel lonely?
No, it's okay with us.
Okay. We are talking about Indiana politics and the primary here on No Limits. My guests are Rex Early, Kip Two, and Leslie Weidenbender. I'm John Kroll. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking today about Indiana politics and the primary. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can shoot us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Leslie Weidenbender of thestatehousefile.com, Kip Two, former Democratic Party chair, and Rex Early, former Republican Party chair. We've gotten some email questions here that I'd like to get to or comments. This one's from a listener in Monrovia named Ann. Says, Richard Murdoch's recent interview with the editorial board of the Indianapolis Star made clear that he is a proud flag bearer of the party of no. And should he reach the Senate, he will further damage the institution and the Republic and do so proudly. I think we can gather which way Ann plans to vote here. There's not really a question here. It's more that this sort of characterization of the Tea Party, and I think, Leslie, you've alluded to this, that to some degree the perception of the Tea Party isn't a fair one. That it's become a caricature.
I think Anne is getting right to the heart of this issue in the Republican Party. I mean, she calls it the party of no, but there are a group of people who do want Republicans to stand up and say no to things that they think are wrong and to say that they will not compromise on their ideals. To some, that is the party of no, and that's a negative thing. To others, that's a positive thing, and this is the division right now in the Republican Party.
Kip, too, does that to some degree frustrate or puzzle you? I mean, really, well, we've sort of been living in a Republican world since Reagan's.
I don't really understand why they're complaining. I mean, the leader of the Senate, Mitch McConnell, said right from the outset that his goal was to make Barack Obama a one-term president. We now know from a book that just came out a couple weeks ago that on inauguration night, Newt Gingrich, Mitch McConnell, John Boehner, and a couple of others got together and said, we got to figure out a way to stop this guy right away. So they were right from the very beginning, they were the party of no. The Tea Party should be thrilled with their attempts at being no. They've had more filibusters in the United States Senate than any time in the history of the Republic. It has been the party of no. There's no question about it. I think it's been a detriment to our country. Barack Obama took over the presidency at one of the times of our nation's greatest peril. We had two wars, and we were looking at the abyss. From a financial standpoint, and we had a bunch of Republicans who didn't want to do anything to help this president. And I think it's not a good thing, and it continues to not be a good thing.
We are talking about Indiana politics and the primary here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. Jim, welcome to the program.
How do you do, sir?
Doing fine. Your question, please.
I've got a question about this. The election coming up on Tuesday. Is it just a primary, or are we also voting for judges, at least in Marion County?
The answer is yes. The answer is yes. You will be voting for judges, and it is a primary. You'll have, if you take a Republican ballot, then you will be able to choose among a variety of folks who are running for judge on the Republican side, in addition to whoever you want to in any of the offices. Same as if you're a Democrat, you'll be able to pull a Democratic ballot and vote for the judges on the Democratic side as well.
Are you, Kip, and I want to reframe the question I was asking you right before the break. Is there any cost to you that all of the attention and energy is on the Republican side? I mean, do you not get any of that oomph? You got a lot of momentum last time out of the Obama-Clinton thing.
Yeah, there is
a cost.
You
don't have that this year.
And I tell you, the biggest cost is, as I was saying earlier, when I turn on the television and there are six straight ads criticizing the president and there's no response because we don't have a primary, that doesn't help the presidents or Democrats. And so that's not there's a definite downside because all consumers are hearing right now or voters are hearing right now are criticisms of Barack Obama with no defense. And so, no, I don't that definitely hurts us.
Rex Early, on the flip side, how long is it going to take to pull the pieces back together?
First of all, I want to
go ahead,
have
Rex,
a little conversation about Kip's definition of no. And sure enough, they are saying no to runaway spending, and they are saying no to cutting our military in half. And there's a lot of things they're saying no for. And believe it or not, I think come next November, that the electorate of this country is going to say no to those same things. So while we're in the partisan wing of this program. Now, what was the new question?
Well, the question is really, since all of the quarrels this time are on your side, you know, in 2008 we had to watch that long mating dance between Obama and Clinton making up after the primary. How long is it going to take to bring things back together?
Well, all of our nominee elect, it looks like all he has to do is pay off Gingrich's debt, and even the most avid right wing conservative Republicans are going to vote Republican this year, regardless of who they were for Gingrich or Santorum, or regardless of who they were for. Our party will certainly be together come November.
Even with the Lugar Murdoch thing?
Yeah, I think so. Indiana has to be carried by a Republican to have any chance at all of getting majority in the Senate. So no thinking Republican is going to vote against Murdoch if he happens to be our candidate.
I won't disagree with that characterization that probably the Republican Party will come back together for the fall. The question is, with respect to the presidential primaries and the Lugar-Murdoch race, whether they've turned off the independent voters, and that's the folks who really decide the elections in the fall. And I think all the evidence is in that they have done that, that the independent voter is not a fan of the modern Republican Party at this moment.
We are talking about Indiana elections and the primary on Tuesday here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. Eric Bradner, welcome back to the program. How are you?
Doing well, thank you.
That's good. You got a question or comment or want to take us over the hurdles here a little bit?
Sure, yeah. I'd like to remind you all not to forget about Evansville. The 8th District is another congressional district that has a primary coming up, and it's an interesting one. You've got Larry Bouchon, a freshman Republican, running against Christy Risk, who is one of the original sort of Tea Party-type candidates. So to set the scene, in 2010, Bouchon was endorsed by, you know, all the major Republican players, and Risk was running basically with an army of people wearing red T-shirts with her name on them. Risk came within 2 percentage points of beating Bouchon in the primary. That's with a very crowded field. Now she's got him one-on-one. Bouchon probably wins, but you got to remember, this is the 8th District. This is John Hostetler territory. It's kind of hard to find some of these types of people, the same type that are going to go vote for Travis Hankins in the 6th. They don't necessarily show up on the polls. They don't necessarily go to Lincoln Day dinners, but they exist. And if you're talking about tight congressional races, tight congressional primaries, that's one that at least deserves to be part of the conversation.
Thanks for the call, Eric. Appreciate it.
Yeah, I've been hearing the same thing from folks. We don't have a primary on our side. David Crooks, who's our candidate, in that district, did have early, but convinced the other two folks to get out of the race, and so he's home and clear, and at least in the primary season, and has been made part of the DCCC's Red to Blue campaign. So he has raised the sufficient money. I think that he's on the radar screen of the National Democratic Party so that he'll get the money and the resources that he needs to be competitive in the fall. They think that's a district that is probably one of the most attractive in the whole nation that they might be able to pick up.
And I think Democrats, Democrats think that whether Christy Risk wins that race or whether it's Larry Bouchon.
Yep.
Well, go ahead.
Leslie and I are both from the 8th District, being both from Vincennes, and we know that there is no standard voting pattern in the 8th District.
Absolutely not. That's right.
Anything could happen.
The number
or
of the
anybody
district has
could
changed,
be,
but they still
could
call
be
it
nominated.
The bloody.
And I agree probably just the way that looking at the map, and it's a new map, I agree that probably it'll be the hardest district for the Republicans to hold a victory down there.
Well, and I want to pick up on what was perhaps Eric's subtext here, that we're focusing too much on this part of the state, that is the largest media market in the state. Does that distort the effect, especially since we're talking to some degree about Republican primaries, and Hamilton County is pretty much the mother lode these days for Republican candidates, Kip, too?
Well, this is WFYI. We're not broadcasting from Evansville,
That's true.
I think it was fair
for us to talk
about the 5th District first. But, I think the 8th District is going to be interesting. I mean, another district that I think there's an interest is Todd Young's district. There is a primary in the Democratic side in that race, and so that certainly deserves a little bit of conversation as well. You've got a brigadier general on the Democratic side, Jonathan George, running against Shelley Yoder, who is former Miss Indiana. So you've got and then a guy named Winningham, who once worked for Congressman Hamilton, who, of course, is near deity in the Democratic Party. And so you've got an interesting race shaping up there for the right to run against Todd Young in that district. So you've got some really fascinating things going around the state here in congressional and senatorial politics.
The fascinating thing about the new congressional maps that have been drawn is that almost all the nearly all the districts have some tie to central Indiana now. I mean, even the 9th district comes way up into Johnson County. So it's really interesting. Come fall, we're going to be seeing advertisements from nearly every district in the state.
The 9th district is interesting. They do have the Democrats have got a former brigadier general in the Army as a candidate, but Todd Young was a captain in the Marine Corps and served nine or 10 years in the Marine Corps. So he's not going to be out Miller ties, maybe outranked.
And that remains a tough. I actually think that's a tougher race district for Democrats now. I mean, when you pick up all those Johnson County Republicans
you picked up Morgan County, you picked up Johnson County, you picked up nothing but Republican counties, and cut a lot of the Democrat and Lawrence County. All are good Republican counties, and you've cut some of the Democrat strongholds out of that district. So it's not near as tough as it was when Young won, I'll guarantee you.
I completely agree with that. And most of it went over to the Bouchon's district, and that's why Dave Crooks is a number one target. Beating Todd Young will be a difficult task, and especially when our side is involved in a divisive primary as well. So that one will be tougher for us to pick up, but we don't know what the member is going to look like yet.
So let me ask, we're getting toward the end of the program here, so I'd like to do a wrap-up, just get some prediction. What's going to be the biggest surprise on Tuesday? Rex Early.
I think the biggest surprise might be in the 5th District. I'm not sure who. I have no clear feelings about who's going to win that thing. And McGough, even though, I'm a Brooks favorite, or she's my favorite candidate, but McGough, with his military experience and the fact that there's more of Marion County in that district, and so McGough's got a better name ID in Marion County, where he lost the last time to Burton, and I think people have counted McGough out, and that could be a surprise.
He could be a surprise. Kip, too.
Well, I'm going to say Wayne Siebold. He's not run For Congress before, but he's the guy with the, I think, the largest base, if you will, not dividing up. He's actually a mayor of a city in the district. If he wins, I think a lot of people will be surprised, but I won't be shocked because he's actually got a base to run from.
He got in with 8 weeks to go was his problem.
Yeah.
I'm fascinated by Wayne Siebold. I'm surprised, actually, that he hasn't garnered more attention in that race. I'm going to go with the fact that I think Travis Hankins in the 6th District is going to run a better race than most people think. I think he's going to be a real challenge for Luke Messer. I don't know that he can win, but I think people will be surprised at how well he does.
And, you know, how long we started this program by talking about Luger Murdoch. How late in the evening is that thing going to get decided, and what do you think the spread's going to be? I'm not going to ask you to pick a winner, unless you want to, but how close do you think this thing's going to be?
I just have no idea. One day I feel one way about it, another day I feel another way, and listening to the discussion about how many Democrats might cross over and vote has me rethinking everything. I think we just can't know.
I've been saying all along that I thought Luger was in deep trouble. Anytime an incumbent's under 50% in a primary, it's usually fatal. I'm going to stick with what I said. We don't know because we don't know how many Democrats are going to cross over. But if it were a purely Republican primary, he would lose and lose pretty big.
I think Luger has to win Marion County by big numbers, and Marion County will be one of the first counties to have a count.
How big a number he's going to win by in Marion County?
I think he's got to win by, I think he has to win by 30,000. What do you get? What do you think?
I just don't know what their turnout models are.
Who knows?
It's really hard to know how many people are actually going to come out.
Yeah, when Kip's right that the turnout is not as much as I expected. According to the early voting. So,
this has been a fascinating conversation, and the beauty of it is we're all going to be able to find out in about 5 days just how right or how wrong we all were. I want to thank my guest for joining me today, Rex Early, who is the former state Indiana Republican Party chair.
It's been a joy.
Good to have you here, Rex. Kip Tu, who is the former Indiana Democratic Party chair.
Thanks for having me.
And, of course, my colleague at thestatehousefile.com, managing editor of thestatehousefile.com, Leslie Weidenbender. Leslie, thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much.
We will see you next week. Please have a good week.
No Limits is a production of WFYI Public Radio, 90.1 FM and HD1. Producer, Sharon Alseth. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producer, Jeanette Rhodes. And Board Engineer, Don Hibschweiler. We invite you to join us each Thursday at 1 p.m. for No Limits, rebroadcast at 8 p.m., and you can listen online at WFYI.org.